Welcome back to Diamond Niners Weekly for week 8 of the 2024 season. This is Nick, joined as always by Kevin.
What's up, Niner Nation?
Producer Brad making it all go.
Hey, hey.
And joining us this week, special guest, the voice of the Niners, Mr. Joe Templin.
Hello.
What's up, Joe?
No, we're in the middle of it. I got the Tigers game on here, so baseball's back in the MLB, and I know our pro-Niner guys are going to be getting after it here soon in the minor league starting, so it's baseball heaven right now, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, this is a great time of year. I think the minor league season, AAA has already started, but I think everybody else gets started this Friday. So I'm repping the Cannonballers here, K-Town in the house. So that's gonna be a fun time of year. So man, it's been a minute since we talked to you. It seems like a lot has happened for you since the last time we talked. You were down at Clemson. See, you're probably going to add more to this, but right off the top of my head, I can come up with the fact that I believe since the last time we had you on the show, you've gotten married and bought a house.
Yep. Yes, that is correct. We got married in July. And then this is the house that we bought in December, sitting in the dining room here. So quite a few things have gone on life-wise. So it's all good. You know, she got a ring last year. I got a ring too. So we were able to match that.
Well played. I no offense, but I like yours better.
Yeah, I can't tell her that, but me too.
Oh, Kevin, what's up, buddy?
Oh, not too much, man. You earned both of those rings, Joe. So.
Yeah, except one I didn't have to pay for. So.
That's right. That's right.
And that's why you like it better.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. Kevin, you and I did not have a chance to talk about this before we got started. I believe that that your son's travel ball team, y'all played in a one-day tournament on Saturday. Is that right?
Yeah, we did. We're going to Charleston next weekend. We won a little tune-up, so we played a one-day tournament in Charlotte. And, we went 1-1. It was a mixed bag this weekend. So. Ended on a good note, though.
Okay. So there's your Concord A's travel ball update for the week. Solid week, 1-1. Well, can't wait to hear how Charleston goes. That's a pretty cool tournament down there. So can't wait to hear how that goes. Well, boys, let's talk a little bit of Niner baseball because that's what we do here on this show. But goodness gracious, good God Almighty, we've got a series win to talk about. The Niners got on the field with South Florida this weekend at the Hayes, dropped game one, and you start to think, oh man, that's tough. Here we go. But then the boys bounce right back and take games 2 and 3 to win the series. Joe, what was – start us off. Talk about this weekend from your perspective, some of the things that you saw, and get us kicked off with the astute observations of the man that actually scored the games.
It was an improved defensive effort from the week before. Definitely, we had some troubles in the field down at Florida Atlantic, and I know that the guys definitely worked on that in the week, and not having a midweek last week helped to get back on the field and kind of steady the ship. So playing a clean game in the field really helped. And then just not getting down, when you know that it would have been really easy to kind of pack it in and fold after that game one loss. But you know, to have the mental toughness and the resiliency to bounce back, get the game two win, and then to bounce back again in game three and have our third comeback win in the eighth inning or later this year. That was really, really fun to see. And it happened again with two outs in that game three to score all six of those runs in the eighth inning with two outs. Very similar to how it went down against West Virginia and Wofford. So I think that really, really helped galvanize and take that step forward as we head in to the third week of this conference play, and just kind of give us the stepping stone and the boost that we need coming up on a pretty tough stretch where we got to leave the friendly confines of the Hayes for 7 out of the next 8 that we've got.
Kevin, I think that what happened in that magical inning there, that's what Toby Bicknell calls Hayes magic.
That's right. Yeah, it'll pop up from time to time, and it's glorious when it does, right?
Yes, absolutely, it is. We've got several things to unpack here, I think, guys. One is we knew this coming in. I mean, we talked about this on last week's show. South Florida can hit up and down the lineup, and they did. That's what we saw. But what I think we found something, and Joe, to your point about the defense, I think we found something. Shifting Stallman back over to third, which I think is probably his more natural position. I don't think it's a coincidence that his bat is starting to heat up at the same time that he's moved back over to third. And you've brought in Dante DeFranco, who has been in the program, and by today's standards, he's been here forever. And he's getting a chance to hold down shortstop. And Dante, as he moved, he's been all over the field for us, and he still does move around from time to time. In fact, I think what in game three, he might have subbed out to left field as a defensive sub. But Dante seems to be settling in at short as well.
Yeah, definitely. He's really, really played well, and you know, he can really get the bat heating up as well. And in kind of small pockets, he can get hot. And it happened right around the start of conference play last year as well. He had I think it was a 5-hit game against La Tech out there in Ruston that helped us take 2 out of 3. So to see him come in and be that kind of veteran leader at short was really good. And I talked to Stallman on the travel back from Florida last weekend about, you know, switching back from short to third. He likes short a little bit more, as I think a lot of infielders will, because that's kind of like the key spot. But, you know, he did say that going back to third was pretty natural to him, since that's what he played all of last year. So I think, you know, trying to solidify the left side of that infield will be something to look for as we go on. And Shane Taylor's been great on that other side. I actually really liked Shane at third. I thought he had a good arm. Those couple games that he played over there, he made some really good throws over to first. But with that, where you can kind of plug in him and play him at second, short, or third, because as you mentioned, when Dante moved back to play left, we put Shane over at short. So to have that versatility from him, another veteran guy, not necessarily in the program, but as a senior in his collegiate career, is really good and gives us some options to move some pieces around in there, depending on what kind of play style we need to have.
Yeah, Joe, and it seems similar to last year. I remember last year we kind of struggled a little bit, and then we got the defense worked out. Once we got the defense worked out, and then we hit our stride and made a little run the conference play, and then made a bigger run in the conference tournament. To hit on your point about having some versatility over there, I think the coaching staff wants to put the best defensive lineup they can put on the field. Speak a little bit about that on your end.
Yeah, so we've seen a lot of tinkering with the lineup throughout the year, and that's just not a this year thing. I think last year it took about 30 games before we had the same lineup batting order and position-wise. I think it was something in the 30s, I think, until we had the same lineup in back-to-back games. So, yeah, I think just starting with the best 9 guys on the field that are going to prevent runs, because, you know, you can't lose if you don't give up a run. So that's, I think, number one for this coaching staff is, and, you know, you talk to Coach Woodard all the time. He talks about how we pride ourselves on pitching and defense. And so taking care of things defensively is always a big part to this team. And, you know, we haven't practiced when we've gone on the road at their places this year. We've practiced in the morning before we leave. But in those practices on Thursday nights over the years, we'll spend the majority of our time out there working defensive stuff and getting kind of the feel for the field. So it's definitely a defense first approach, and getting the guys out there that can do the best to prevent those runs and keep, you know, runners stranded or keep them off the base paths is definitely a priority of the staff. And I think you're starting to see a lineup that's going to shift more towards that, and then trusting that the offense is going to come, you know, as you keep the other team off the base paths.
You know, something else that's kind of coming to the forefront here, Joe, is and this is one, I think this is one of the joys of watching not a game, but a season, is to watch that evolution. You're talking about the lineup, but also if we were to travel back in time to the week before the season started and said, so what are you expecting this year out of, like, oh, I don't know, Reed Hare, AJ Bianchina, or Johnny Sutrick? Solid depth pieces, young guys, you know, I'm sure they have a future here. We'll have to see how it plays out. But no, the future seems to be now, in a lot of these cases, because so far this season, all three of those young guys have been key contributors at different times.
Yeah, definitely. They've, you know, and you look at the lineup that we had on opening day and how different it is now. Those three guys weren't penciled in as starters, you know, coming in as true freshmen, first year of college baseball there. You know, we have 28 new guys on this spring roster, and a lot of them are JUCO transfers or four-year transfers who have collegiate experience. So you'd think it'd be on those guys. But those three that you mentioned have really stepped in and stepped up when they've gotten their chance. You know, Johnny with the triple that helped us beat West Virginia. And then we go to Old Dominion where, you know, he's from Virginia Beach there. And he hits the home run in game one against Old Dominion. And then Reed Hare getting the start Sunday at Florida Atlantic and bringing up two big hits, and then picking it up this past weekend, driving in three and getting two hits in game two there. So, and then AJ, who's played his way into the lineup, you know, in that DH spot. I don't think his defense is quite necessarily there. So, you know, trying to get him in the lineup as the DH as much as possible. And he's made it work, and, you know, we're really proud and happy with what we see out of those guys. So, yeah, definitely getting the contribution from the freshmen is really nice to see.
You know, Kevin, one thing I was talking to Johnny's mom and dad in Kannapolis. This was the first time they had been to that ballpark. Of course, why would they have been, right? Because they're from Norfolk. But I asked Johnny's dad the question. I said, "Has Johnny always been a pull hitter? Because I mean, that's what he's done so far. I mean, he is pulling the ball down the left field line, and if he's hitting a home run, it's going over, you know, down the left field line." Interesting comment from Johnny's dad. Never. He had never been a pull hitter until he got here. I said, how do you explain that? What do you think this is? I have no idea. It's like, but like, he was way more likely to go opposite field, in high school or in travel ball. And now he's here and he's like a dead pull hitter.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, kids develop at different rates, and sometimes you develop different skills as you get older. It's interesting. That's interesting to hear. And obviously there's a lot of coaching that goes into that as well, you know?
Yeah. Of course, Joe, you can predict what my response to that was as well. I really don't care where he puts the ball in play, as long as he's putting the ball in play.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We'll take hits. They don't ask you how, they ask you how many. We'll take him wherever he wants to put him. So that's interesting though.
Yeah, I just assumed that was kind of a thing. And he's like, no, he's never been a pull hitter, because now he is definitely, you know, he is definitely a dead pull hitter. So, yeah, some other guys to shout out here too. And one guy I think that deserves an attaboy is the emergence of Juan Correa at first base. Juan's doing – I wouldn't say that Juan was ever doing a poor job defensively at first, but Juan has really turned it on with he's picked some really tough balls of late and is doing a good job over there at first. Where Juan was really struggling was at the plate. And I mean, I don't think that's a secret, but Juan's gotten it going lately. He is so unbelievably powerful. I'm not going to be able to tell you when exactly it was, but there was – he hit a home run last week that I thought was pop fly. And it just kept going. It just kept towering. But also what Juan has added to the repertoire now is several times with runners in scoring position, he's put a ball through the infield out onto the outfield grass that have driven in runs. And that's what was missing from the lineup, was a little bit of situational hitting for runs. And Juan's added that. So I got to give him an attaboy for the emergence of Juan Correa.
Definitely. Yeah. He's actually played his way up the lineup too. If you look at the starting lineup, how it's been, you know, when he was struggling a bit at the plate before, he's gotten hot here. He was batting, you know, sixth, seventh, eighth in that range. And now he's up to batting in the cleanup spot. And, you know, it helps when you homer in six out of your last nine, like he has. But I don't know if I've ever seen, and Cam was probably the closest, but I don't even know if Cam had the consistent power in terms of the exit velo that I've seen when Juan's at the plate, because it seems like every single time he makes contact, it's, I don't know if I've ever seen it less than 95 miles an hour. And a lot of times he's sitting 102, 104, 106, like even these foul balls that he's hitting and pulling down the left field line. Like, and Rene Lastras has some of that power too. I've seen, just looking at the TrackMan data while we're up during the games, it's like, wow, he's constantly leaving the bat at triple digits on the exit velo. And so just put it in between the white lines and you've got a pretty good chance of getting on base.
Yeah. Thanks to the game notes here that I'm looking at. Last 10 games stats, Juan Correa's leading team, 378, six homers, and he's slugging only 892 on those 10 games. So
only
892, 13 RBIs. So that's an impressive 10-game streak there. I think that follows his game at ODU. I think that's since ODU, right? That's probably those 10 games. So, and also 1,000 fielding percentage at first base. That's you can't ask for more than that from a first baseman.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and he had a great snag in the – which game was that? One of the doubleheader games. No, it was the third game at Florida Atlantic. And they didn't have TrackMan there, so I couldn't see how hard it was hit. But that thing was smoked, like, right to him and just was able to snag it like that. And so, yeah, you're talking about the improvements of defense, and you can definitely see it in the game. He's gotten better as the season's gone on there at first.
And don't worry about the games blending together, Joe. Trust me. We wrapped up the softball podcast before we jumped on here, and I was talking about something as it happened in one game when it completely happened in another. So, you know, if you take in about six games a weekend, somewhere along the way, it just all runs together. At one point in the stands on Saturday, I tweeted something about Charlotte and USF, except I put Wichita State in there, which is who was the softball team was playing. So
See, but you can come back and laugh it off on your account. We can't really do that on the main account. I think that Saturday morning I put out the Sunday starters, and someone was like, yeah, but it's Saturday. And I'm like, you're right, but we're wearing cream and it's a 1 o'clock start. So in my mind, it was a Sunday game.
Yeah. Hey, it works for me. It felt like a Sunday. You know, and so, you know, the bottom line of what it comes down to, Joe, is Diamond Niner Report Corporate's been trying to fire us for years, and they can't get rid of us. So
you're right. We can do what we want to, right? We can do what we want to.
If we were going to get fired, it had already happened. So, I totally tweeted about what we were doing to Wichita State on the baseball field. And I'm like, oh, geez. I forgot which side of Phillips Road I was on.
That's all right. It happens.
Yeah, it happens. So let's
go ahead, Nick.
Yeah, go ahead, Kevin. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, so you're getting ready to go on a road trip. I know you're going to Fayetteville and then coming back, and then you're heading to San Antonio. Take us through your prep as you're getting ready for these road trips.
Yeah. So a lot of time is spent on the notes. And I spend a lot of time on those because it helps me when we're in game and post game. Because if I do a lot of the research ahead of time, then when something crazy happens, I don't have to sit there and look it up as much. It's already, you know, readily available. So today I got the notes for Campbell ready to go, and I don't spend too much prep on the visiting team. You know, if you tune into the broadcast, I'll have some stuff that I'll say about the visiting team that's pretty easily available. But for the most part, I know that it's going to be Charlotte fans tuning in, and I feel like they don't care as much about info on the other team. You know, some stuff will be important to say, like, you know, how good Grant Nipp, the catcher for Campbell, has been this year. And D1 Baseball ranked him as the number one catcher in their midseason rankings. And we had a couple of relief pitchers on there. So just stuff like that, that's, you know, like, hey, like, you might not know much about Campbell. Here's what they're about a little bit, but mostly focused on us. So I've already got a very base level prep started for UTSA, where I've kind of got their baseline stats to update after they get done playing tomorrow. And then bus ride back, I'll start flipping over things, updating in the notes. And then Wednesday, I'll go hard with that. And my goal is to get everything done as much as I can on Thursday before we take off, so that on the travel day, I can just be present with the team on the travel day. Like, I'll still have stuff that I'm doing, and, you know, I probably won't get things finalized and ready to be pushed out with all the graphics I need to make and everything until we land in San Antonio on Thursday. But, you know, I like to be working as few of trips in the airport as possible, because it's never easy to work in an airport like that. So trying to get as much done ahead of time, you know, as Coach Woodard kind of says, like, speeding up to slow it down. That's kind of how I view all the research and stuff that I put in. So I'll do a lot of it tomorrow on the bus ride back after the game, and then Wednesday, so that Thursday, you know, I'm only working a little bit here to get things finalized and put out before we start play on Friday.
Joe, do you not have access to, like, you know, whatever, you know, the Diamond Sky Club or whatever it happens to be, you know, so you could, like, go into an area and work?
I have at Charlotte Airport is one where our Capital One card, no free ads, gets us into a smaller area, not like the Admiral's Lounge or anything like that. So that can be a spot where I can go. But a lot of times that place is pretty packed. Or there's, you know, a family in there who's got some kids running around. So if I'm lucky enough to snag a table in there, I'll take advantage of it. But otherwise, it's just kind of, you know, finding a spot next to an outlet near the gate and plugging away.
I have heard, not that I'm a frequent flyer, but I have heard that some of those exclusive type of places are not so exclusive anymore, and that basically just everybody's in them.
Oh yeah, they let me in, so I think there's no exclusivity possible there.
Yeah, I stole this line, but, you know, I refuse to belong to any club that would have me as a member. So it's kind of like that. For those of you that are wondering what we're talking about, if you have never, I happen to have a copy. This I printed a copy of the game notes out. This is actually from the West Virginia series. I just happen to have here on the desk. These things are, you know, that tweet or the news story gets posted to Charlotte49ers.com. And you might look at it and say, oh, it's a news story about the upcoming game. But as a PDF in there, if you really want to know what's going on, if you're really interested in the game, you should go and open that PDF that's attached to the game notes. I mean, these things are like – it's 36 pages. This is the West Virginia series. It's 36 pages, and it's got everything. What's that, Joe?
We're up to 40 now, because that one didn't have like last 10 game stats and conference stats and stuff. So we're up to 40.
I mean, for heaven's sakes, here's – and Kevin loves this. This is the uniform tracker that Joe updates. So what our record is by what uniform we're wearing. All-time records, season records, bios on coaching staff. Here on the back page, it's like – a whole roster with everybody's picture. I mean, this stuff is, if you're interested in Charlotte baseball, you should be looking at the game notes. I know Joe puts a lot of time into a set of these. There's no telling how long it takes you to produce one of these, but he's publishing a small book every time we go to play a new opponent. And it's awesome. It's an awesome resource. Print them out. Again, no free. We won't tell on you here. Go print them out at work. Print them out at work, and then take them home with you for the weekend, and leave them by the chair where you sit and watch the game.
And I will say, second what Nick says about the game notes, they're second to none. In fact, you've been recognized several times for your game notes nationally with awards. I think last year you were third in the nation.
Yep.
Game notes what organization puts on that?
So that's our professional organization. It was called COSIDA, and then the last couple of years they've done a rebrand. So it's now CSC, College Sports Communicators. So they put on a bunch of contests as part of their publication and digital designs competition. I'm actually a committee member on that, so I serve in one of the categories is mine, and I coordinate with the judges that I have working with that to get those scores compiled and sent in. So I appreciate all the kind words that you've said about them. And this is that's basically how I got started into this field when I was doing hockey for Michigan as a student. My boss there put me in charge of the game notes, updating him, and this is where my late night after games started, because we'd play 7 o'clock game, get done at 9:30, 10, and I'd stay up there in the press box until midnight, getting everything ready to go, so we could have a fresh set ready to go for the next game. And so that's really kind of where combining my pre-existing love with the history of sports and the stats behind them with actually putting that down to paper. I think that right there, my experience that I had as an undergrad really helped me prepare me for my career here and how to research and find tidbits and useful information, because, you'll go through a stretch where, the team's not doing well and you've got to delete a lot of those nice, fun nuggets of information that you had in there that are no longer true. And so it's just kind of knowing, okay, what stuff can I look at and how can I spin stuff in a positive way? Not necessarily trying to turn negative things to a positive, but just trying to find things that aren't as glaringly obvious to talk about. And my goal with those notes, with how big they are, is to give someone who doesn't know anything about our program, which, for example, a random ESPN Plus broadcast, to give those to a broadcaster for a home team that we're going to play who doesn't really have an idea of what we're about, and to have them, after reading through those, be able to talk about our team like they've watched them all season long and bring up stuff like that. And, when I get compliments from you guys and then from the guys that call the games, like the ESPN crew in the Clemson regional last year, whenever they say like, hey, your notes were fantastic, like there's, I love them. There's so much information in there. That's just really rewarding, because it shows that the people do care about the information that I'm putting out, and it helps them, push out that information and talk about our team in a better sense, which only elevates our brand and makes it better across whoever's watching that. So that's really neat. And the pronunciation guide too, which is, just a small thing, but to hear them say like, oh, your pronunciation guide was great. And then, I'll still get people, I'll say, hey, are there any names that I can help you with? And then they're like, oh, well, I looked at the sheet, but I'll still go over them. And then when they get all of them right, based on what they said, because there's a few names that are very easy to get tripped up on our roster, both this year and in years past. And so when they say, I looked at the pronunciation guide, here we go. And they go through and they get all of them right. That's probably the best part, when it's like, okay, because there's some times where I'm sitting there and I'll say a name to myself 20 times, trying to say how do I phonetically write this down to make it work. And sometimes I'll even go a little bit more like Tony Rossi. I have how to say Rossi on there, and just try to be over descriptive rather than under descriptive, because we'll get some teams that will send in their roster and they won't have a pronunciation guide, and it's like, all right, well, just go with whatever you want to go with and hope that it's right.
Whose name was it, Joe, that we were at the first pitch dinner and the guys were introducing themselves and you were writing down notes on how they said their own name. And there was someone that we were trying to decide how they said their name. Was it Bianchina?
Yeah, being Keenan's took me for a surprise. I wasn't sure how to do that one. And then Jorge de Cardenas, how the stress was put on that, because I thought it would be more like de Cardenas, but it's de Cardenas. Yes. Yeah, so that first pitch dinner, if anyone's ever there and sees me in my little table in the back when they're going through the introductions and I'm on my phone, I'm not just texting to pass the time. I'm sitting there listening to how they say their names and writing it down, especially for all the new guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, we always wait for you to put your pronunciation guide out before we do a show, so we are at least on the right track.
Yeah, and then I'll, for some of the trickier ones, I'll try and catch the guys afterward and say, like, this is how you say it, correct? Like, I didn't mishear you. Yep, that's how I say it. Okay. And then the hard part is, okay, how do I put that into words and syllables that people are likely to understand and put it down on paper that way?
You know, as kind of a segue into the topic, the game notes, as we said, they are so helpful and so great. And if you're not looking at them, you need to be if you're going to watch the games. But we did have this weekend, we had a new broadcaster in the booth. Fitzpatrick. Fitzpatrick. Thank you. Jack Fitzpatrick. I had Jack Fitzpatrick, had a color analyst in the booth that was very familiar with both teams. Bo Durkak, which I had, Kevin read the game notes. That's where the segue is. Kevin read the game notes and he texted me and he said, did you know that Bo Durkak is on the broadcast, on the ESPN Plus broadcast for our games? And I said, Bo Durkak, man, I hadn't heard that name in a minute. And I'm like, how did you know that? He says, game notes, man, it's in the game notes. Bo Durkak, for those that may not remember, was the hitting coach, an assistant coach at Charlotte. Oh, gosh, Kevin, I'm guessing, what was it, circa 2010,
11, 12? Yeah, right around and then, yeah.
Right around and then. A left here, I want to say he went to somewhere in the Midwest.
I think it was Ball State no. He went to be an assistant coach, and then he ended up getting the head coaching job there.
Yeah. But he wound up at South Florida.
Right.
His most recent stop was South Florida. So we had a guy in the ESPN Plus, on the ESPN Plus broadcast, and Bo Durkak, that had spent time at Charlotte and at South Florida. And I got to say, Joe, I don't know if you've had a chance to do this, but I went and pulled up. I think I pulled up game two and just watched a few innings because I wanted to hear Bo and see what he had to say. He was really pretty good. He obviously knows baseball. I mean, there's no doubt about that. He's kind of spent his career in the game. But he also seemed really comfortable behind the mic. I don't know if you got a chance to hear any of that, but I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, I really didn't get a chance to hear it. I don't typically go back and watch the games after they're done, just because I've got so much to do for the next one. I'm so focused on the next one. And even when I'm putting out the clips and stuff like that, it's really hard to hear what I'm clipping. Partially because if I turn it up loud enough where I can hear it, you know, on my computer while I'm clipping it, everyone's ears are going to be blown out when they see it scroll across their feed. So I have to keep it a little bit lower. And then, you know, a lot of times I'm clipping a strikeout or a home run where we've got the music going afterwards. And I, you know, I'm leaned up all the way in my computer like that, trying to hear when the talking just dies down a little bit. So I'm not cutting them off mid-sentence. But from what you were saying, from some other chatter that I saw around online, it sounded like he did really well. And so I think he's going to be back for the Memphis series, I think he said. I don't have any involvement on who gets picked for that. I just kind of get sent the schedule. Here's who's doing this game. I know the American has, I think it's a rule. It's either a rule or a strong suggestion where they want two broadcasters for each game. So that's why Bo is in for this series. And it's just been Jack solo for the first half of the year. So to get him and making it our debut with an analyst, to have him with intimate knowledge of both programs was really nice. And I know, I think Jack is probably happy that he's not talking to himself for 3 hours, because doing that on my end on the radio, talking to myself for 3 hours, can get old and tiring, especially come game three of a weekend series. When you're looking at the same thing, or even go back to Houston last year, where we've got six games in a row where I'm looking at the same skyline, trying to talk about the same ads on the outfield wall in between at bats. But to hear that he did really well, and get that feedback is really nice to hear. And so our crew that decides the broadcast talent, handles the broadcast, you know, giving that feedback to them, that they made a good choice, is really good for us to do.
So
he was at Illinois State. He was at Charlotte from 03 to 09, and then he went to Illinois State, where he became head coach there. Then he went to Miami, Florida for 2019 season, and then South Florida 2020 till 2023, I believe.
Gotcha.
I think that baseball, I think that baseball lends itself to a two-man crew. Just because it's not constant action. There's lots of space to fill. Although I will say, and I don't know why I feel this way about it. There may be varying opinions, but I feel like it's easier to get away with the one man on radio than it is on TV. And I would say that's probably because when you're calling a game on the radio, you've got to fill in. You've got a lot more information you've got to convey. You're not getting help from the pictures, so it's probably easier for you to fill that time. But having somebody for Jack to bounce off of, and especially somebody knowledgeable of the game the way Bo is, I thought that worked.
I think you're onto something there, especially in the TV crew, like the TV side lending its way to a two man crew, more so even than radio. Because, you know, the play-by-play person is there to tell you what is happening, and then the analyst there is to tell you why that's happening. And it's a lot easier to explain why when you have a visual in front of you rather than, you know, and not to say that I don't want someone else or someone else couldn't do it with me on the road. Definitely not the case. But just having that picture to go off of, where you can look at the monitor and say, okay, like, you know, look at this shift. This is why they're doing this shift, or something like that. Or, you know, these are where the pitches were in the zone. This is why they're attacking that part of the zone. It's a lot easier, I think, to be able to, you know, describe that why things are happening when you can look at it. And then in the listener and viewer's mind, it's like, oh, okay, that makes a lot more sense, instead of if I'm not explaining something correctly or in a way that's easy enough for people to understand. When all they're hearing is my voice, they'd be like, well, what is he talking about? I can't really picture that.
Yeah. Well, ironically, Joe, you sometimes do end up with a broadcast partner on the road. It just may not be of your own choosing or by on purpose exactly. But like at FAU, like previously at San Antonio, you just kind of sit in the stands and call the game. And sometimes your microphone picks up all kind of things.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got my my crowd mic or my natural sounds mic, so that it's not just sounding like I'm talking in a windowless room by myself. Yeah, exactly. So we got that, so you can hear, you know, the pings of the bat and the ball hitting the mitt. But you know, sometimes when I'm at those places where I'm in the stands, if there is a piece of shade that I've been given, other people also want to sit under that shade, and so they'll come crowd right around the table and talk to themselves and to other people that are there, and not realize that there's a microphone sitting right behind them that's going to pick up everything that they say. So sometimes I have to turn that down, or we'll get some fun and interesting conversations that I don't know where they're going to go. And even then, sometimes it's hard for me to hear what those are saying if it's not coming into my headphones fully, or if I'm talking over it, but I can't tell that because I've got it coming through my headphones and then just my regular ears. If they're saying something while I'm saying that's cutting through, I won't be able to hear it necessarily.
Yeah, we were talking about this a little bit before we got on the air. There was, and we think maybe it was at San Antonio, that a woman was sitting near your crowd mic two women were sitting near your crowd mic discussing how one of them had swollen ankles.
Yeah, never know what you're going to get when you're sitting in the crowd.
And it was all clear as a bell on the broadcast. You could hear you calling the game, and then there's these two women discussing one of them having swollen ankles.
And we got swept that weekend, so there I wasn't probably doing a whole lot of talking in between the at-bats because there wasn't much positive to talk about in between those at-bats.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well, let's turn to Paige a little bit, guys. The Niners continue to pitch pretty well. Finally, added that not only the solid defense, but mixed in some timely hitting. The Niners have had their chances throughout the season, and that's as evidenced by we hadn't won a series, but you know we hadn't been swept either. So the Niners are doing enough right to be in these games. But this weekend, it's kind of some clutch hitting is what it came down to drive some runs in. Hopefully, we're going to build on that because this week. Starting this week, things are pretty doggone tough. And that starts with a matchup with the Campbell Camels coming up tomorrow night. By the time you're hearing this, it'll be tonight, Tuesday night, down at Segra Stadium in Fayetteville, home of the Fayetteville Woodpeckers, I believe, which is the low A or the single A affiliate of the Houston Astros. So Cam Fisher has got some experience in that stadium of late. This is going to be a tough midweek matchup, no matter which way you slice it, because Campbell as a baseball program for about the past, I want to say 5, 6, 7 years for sure, has been really an impressive program. And you know, when you play them, you're going to have your hands full.
Yeah, definitely. And their MO, especially over the recent years, has been to throw their best arms in the midweeks. I don't know as much now that they're in the CAA and it's a better conference than the Big South, but I know like last year and the year before they were throwing their ace in these Tuesday and Wednesday games when they're playing teams like us, like ECU, like NC State and all these power teams, because that's the way that they're going to boost their RPI and they can afford to throw their third, fourth, fifth best arm on the weekend and get those wins. But, you know, looking at that, it looks like they are going to throw their best pitcher tomorrow. Let me find his name. Peschel, I think. Cole Peschel, 4.23 ERA, making his seventh start. So he's got the lowest ERA among their qualified pitchers with at least one inning pitch per team game played. So, you know, we're going to get their best. But you look at their ERA and their pitching stats as a whole, and it looks like it's a bit of a down year for Campbell, which is weird to say to a team that's sitting at 19-8. Offensively, they're as good as they have been. Their catcher, Grant Nipp, like I mentioned, you know, top 10 in the country in slugging, home runs, batting average, all those fun offensive stats. But you look at their pitching and not as good as Campbell is used to. And I think that's something where, you know, using kind of that revitalized offense that we've seen in the Sunday game against Florida Atlantic with the 13 runs and then this past week with the 6-run eighth inning. And I think getting into this Campbell bullpen early will set us up for some success. And then using some of our key pieces in the bullpen where we've seen AJ, Tony, and Ryan Deggs throw multiple times in a weekend, we can afford to throw some of those guys tomorrow night and get a really, really solid win that can just help the confidence and roll and get us three in a row.
You mentioned AJ.
Yeah, and one of those midweeks, Kevin, was East Carolina. Yeah. East Carolina's already dropped a midweek to Campbell early in the season, so they're dangerous for sure, as always. Go ahead, Kevin.
Yeah. You mentioned AJ. He went long relief this week. 5 1/3, I believe. What are your thoughts about him jumping? We saw Tony Rossi jump in the starting rotation down at FAU. What are your thoughts about possibly seeing him jump in and start a game for the Niners down the road here?
I don't know if we'll see AJ as a starter. I mean, he's definitely shown that he's got the longevity in the arm to go that long, two outings this year with 80 plus pitches. Probably the toughest thing for AJ, which clearly wasn't an issue this past week, and going 5 2/3 and a really solid getting the win in game two there. But he's only got two pitches, a fastball and a really, really good slider. And you don't see too many starting pitchers with only two pitches like that. So I think that's what makes AJ so good coming out of the bullpen is – you know, obviously teams are going to know that they're going to see a fastball and a slider, but his two pitches are so good and he can locate them so well that he can just overpower guys with this stuff. And that's why you see his K per nine up at 15 point something, which is crazy to say that it's come down three full strikeouts per nine innings. But it's still top 10 in the country and leading the American Athletic Conference right now. I think it's sixth in the country, if I remember from my research today. So yeah, I don't know if we'll see him come out, and it could be something where he is more comfortable coming out of the bullpen instead of being a starter. Some guys like that a little bit more, but he's definitely shown he's taken on kind of that fireman role. We saw Donnie a little bit last year. He was a starter and then became a long reliever and then transitioned to closer. And that fireman role was something I think that I heard from Tennessee. I can't remember the name of their arm, but the dude that when they got into a jam, Vitello would always turn to him and he could shut him down. And I think that's kind of the role that AJ's taken on here, where he can come out of the back end, but he can also be the first guy that we turn to if we need to.
And you're right about the two pitches. So once you get one time through the lineup with just the two pitches, they start seeing it again, second time through and then the third time through. I mean, you know, it could be trouble, you know, like you're saying, as a starter. Yeah, I was just curious your thoughts. I mean, we've tinkered with our starting rotation. I don't know if we've ever had the same rotation twice in 2 weeks in a row this season so far. But it's starting to even out, and we're starting to have some consistency there.
Yeah, for sure. Chase Carson's really stepped in and been well for us these past couple of weeks. Cole Reynolds has been outstanding, taking over as the Friday game one guy. And then it has been a bit of a revolving door for game three. We've seen Cam Hansen be in and out of that weekend rotation. And I think these past couple of weeks have been good to get his confidence back and get him into a spot to get back in the rotation. Trey Baker, he's been a guy who's had some really good starts and good outings, and he's going to go for us Tuesday against Campbell. So, you know, just really, I think we're still looking for a solid number three to join that rotation, because I think now Chase Carson has kind of played his way into that number two role. But, you know, I think honestly, if you ask, you know, Coach Woodard, probably everything after Cole Reynolds is probably up for grabs. But to see some of those guys do as well as they have in that rotation the past couple weeks has been really reassuring to see.
For my money, I think that if we're going to – this is just a gut feeling. I got no evidence, no nothing here. But if we're going to do what we want to do, I think that it's going to have to include Cam Hansen getting back to where Cam Hansen expects himself to be. Because if you start getting four or five innings a weekend from Cam Hansen, it changes the whole equation. And I don't care if that's Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. It doesn't matter to me. But if you can get those kind of innings from Cam, it changes what everybody else is doing and what you're asking from everybody else. And I mean, that would be ideal.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I agree with that. And you know, Cam's a guy, he's been here now. This is his third year. Super easy to root for. Good person to get to know over the last few years. So, you know, I always like seeing Cam out there, and it helps when he's got a pitching walk-up song that I really like to hear starting us off on games. So that helps too.
Yeah, he does. Because we've got – I think we've touched on this before. I'm not calling anybody's name, but we've got some really bad ones. you know, it's true.
we're just old, man. We're just getting old, you know, and our tastes are different.
I guess that's one way to put it. That's fine. I just think some of them suck. But again, you know, hey, it's your welcome. It's your song, so you pick it, right? So as we get ready to go into the weekend, we've got to go to San Antonio, which I think is funny. Looking at Joe, you mentioned that looking at some commentary online and you see people making comments on the internet, whether it's a message board or social media or whatever. I have seen plenty of commentary when East Carolina went to San Antonio. One, they were talking about, oh my God, I can't believe this stadium, which they've upgraded it, by the way. Pirate Nation. What you visited was the upgraded version. But two, they were like, oh, this is San Antonio. We should just go down there and just sweep them aside and let's go beat San Antonio. And I'm like, no, this team, this program is gritty and they're tough. And you just don't go down, especially they're tough anywhere, but down there in San Antonio, you just don't go down there and win. They have been, I think that they were worthy at least one, if not two times of an at-large bid that they kind of got robbed of. But they are a tough, gritty ball club. So we've got our work cut out for us this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's just, it's a tough place to play down there at the Birdbath, I think is what they have it nicknamed. You know, and yeah, you mentioned the upgrades. They redid the press box. I think they have chairback seating now in the stands. It looks like it's still really small. I think their official capacity was listed at 1,000 before this year. I don't know if that's been upgraded at all, but they put in protective barriers in front of the dugouts now, like you see most places have. Theirs, it was just open air dugout. Always had to keep your head on a swivel in case a foul ball was coming in. So they've upgraded that with the padding, but, you know, the field there I think is really hard. So, you know, it's maybe not, as ideal for some players and they're not necessarily as used to it. So that's just kind of an innate, advantage, for UTSA to have that, advantage that they're playing on that field all the time, and other teams come in and might not be as familiar with it. You know, weather, it's hot down there. The sun's beating down on you. There's not a whole lot of shade around that stadium. So it's just all these small little things that kind of work to UTSA's favor where, you know, they can do something and it might get under your skin a little bit. And then they can just drive that sliver even further down into there and get in your skin even more and grind out a lot of wins there.
I'm not going to dig for it, but I, Kevin, I know you watched some of that series as well with East Carolina, because their games didn't coincide with ours. They picked up, I'm thinking it's that Friday game. They beat East Carolina 4-2 and they did not have an extra base hit at all. They beat East Carolina without an extra base hit. They've got no problem. They have no qualms about bunting the runner over, and they get him on, get him over, and get him in. And they recruit to that philosophy. And when you're beating ECU without an extra base hit, you're pretty committed to your style of ball, and they work it. They work it to their advantage.
Right, and under Hallmark, that's what they've done. They've been able to keep him around there. He's been courted by other programs with larger checkbooks, but he stayed there and he's built something. He built a solid program. They're on the bubble almost every year that we. The last 3 or 4 years they've been on the bubble for sure, and they play that style of ball and it's worked for them.
Yeah, I wonder how. I mean, heck, all programs like ours, whether it's us or San Antonio, we're all kind of in the same boat. I've been really impressed at how they've been able to hang on to Hallmark and San Antonio, because he's done a fantastic job, just the way Woody's done here as well. So we've both caught kind of a run of luck to be able to hold on to coaches like that, but. Yeah, this is not going to be an easy series this weekend. None of them are. in league, and especially going on the road in league. But what I can hold on to is the way the boys started to kind of put it together this weekend against South Florida. Hopefully that carries over, because those were team wins, and that's what we've kind of been missing, is the getting enough pitching, getting enough defense, and then getting a few timely hits to make it all happen. Hopefully we carry that over and make that happen this weekend. Joe, when do you pull out on, I'm assuming on Thursday, when you headed to the airport?
I don't know the specifics yet. Tyler Simmons puts all that together. I haven't taken a look that far ahead, but usually we'll fly out early afternoon or so. So I think most of the time it's a practice around 8 to 8 or 9 or so in the morning, get done with that. And then we'll head out to the airport around 11 or 11:30 or so. And usually we're looking at a 1 to 2 o'clock flight out. So I'm guessing it'll be somewhere along that timeline. And then we'll get in. And I think San Antonio Airport to where we normally stay is about a half hour drive or so out there. So, and then again, we practiced out there last time we were there, but we haven't practiced at the field where we've been playing yet this year. We've been practicing in the morning instead. So I think that maybe helps a little bit. You know, the guys get a chance to wind down a bit Thursday night and have more team bonding and stuff like that, instead of necessarily going out to the field and having a late night practice.
Kevin, going to the airport to fly to San Antonio, you know what that brings to mind.
Yes, it does. That 2020 season when the season ended on the way to the airport.
Yeah.
That's where the Niners were headed the day the music died, so to speak. As we saw at the first pitch dinner, Pat Wheeler still got his airline ticket in his wallet from that day. So that always brings to mind that memory from that would have been trip. So, but this one's going to go much better. You guys are actually going to get on the plane, and
I hope so.
Yeah, I don't see any reason why you can't make it happen this year, but. That does bring that to mind. So I don't know. I wouldn't say it's a great memory, but that was the cool story that Patrick told at the first pitch dinner after being made gold standard locker for Pat. So really cool story. I guess we're out of time for this week, folks. Joe, it's been cool hanging out with you, man. Thanks for coming in here.
Of course. Anytime you guys want me on, I'm always happy to share the stories from the road. Well, most of the stories from the road.
there's probably some more that maybe we could do like a we don't have subscribers, but maybe we need a subscriber only podcast.
Yeah, sure. Let's go with that.
Yeah, yeah. I actually,
we can just meet up at a bar and he can say the stuff that they can't say on air.
There you go.
Hey, I did come up with a thought for another podcast, Kevin. What if we did a crossover episode where we had Joe on with Ariana Rohde, and the topic was hockey?
There you go. We could, yeah.
Ari haven't played hockey, and Joe haven't worked in hockey. We can do a crossover Diamond Niners Weekly, Diamond Niner Gals hockey episode.
Where is she from? Where she played?
Rhode Island.
She is from Rhode Island. Okay.
Gotcha. Yeah. Actually, talking in the airport while we were waiting for our bags to get in last Sunday night, coming back from Florida, Carson Bain said that he played hockey growing up. So that was interesting because he's not really from a spot of the country where you'd expect hockey to be played. And then we've got two guys from Minnesota, Noah Furch and Adam Stanton. I haven't talked to them about hockey at all, but growing up in Minnesota, I would hope that they were on skates at some point in their life.
Yeah. You could throw David McCabe into the show.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So Ari, we had Ari on the show, on the softball show a few weeks back, and she started playing hockey at 4.
Yep. That's probably when I started doing hockey related activities. I was on skates actually the week before my second birthday. So I was on skates for the first time at 1.
Jeez. Yeah. Wow, that's amazing. All I can say is much respect, because I have never been on a pair of ice skates ever. I have never put ice skates on my feet at all. I've roller skated. I wasn't good at it, but no, never ice skated. Not one time.
Yeah, well, it wasn't by myself, I can tell you that much, but or without the aid of my parents and or a chair. But yeah, but that's what they said before I was 2, I had them on. And, you know, it helps when you've got a Division I hockey program in your hometown. So they've always trying to get people on skates and being a part of the booster for that. We always had guys coming over and being involved with them. So that's, you know, probably where the love for college athletics started at a very, very young age.
Of course, your mom and dad were in town this weekend. Meet them for the first time at Hayes. And they said that they had watched the show. Of course, I immediately apologized, as I usually do, to anyone that says they watched. But yeah, your mom and dad were in town, and wow, that's pretty impressive on ice skates before 2. So yeah, maybe Kevin, that's something we need to, producer Brad, maybe we need to investigate that. We need a crossover hockey episode. We won't have a darn thing to say, Kevin, because I got no hockey takes.
Well, I did go to my first hockey game in 1998 when the Hurricanes came to town.
Okay, there you go.
I was a Caniac for a while, you know, and then they moved from Greensboro to Raleigh when their arena was built. They were playing in Greensboro, so
yeah,
I could get there pretty easily from Charlotte. But was on skates at probably 22, 23 years old when I was first on ice skated. So,
gotcha. Yeah, it's a little harder to pick it up the later, like anything in life. It's harder to latch on the later in life that you get going on it.
45 is probably just too late, right, Joe?
Yeah, it might be. Because, you know, one slip and fall and you're laid up for not just a couple of days, for a month or so.
You break a hip and, you know, that's how it starts, you know? I mean, old. Yeah, so anyway, awesome stuff. Good show tonight, guys. This has been fun. Let's go get some dubs this week. Wouldn't mind taking down Campbell to start with, and if we can win a series on the road at UTSA, all the better. So hopefully the momentum is building. Let's look at it that way, and look forward to a big week in Niner baseball. Folks, we're out of time for tonight. Appreciate you taking the time to hang out with us. If you're enjoying this and you want more of it, consider subscribing to our YouTube channel. Turn on notifications. You can be notified of new content. We're also on Spotify, some other places where you find podcasts as well. Diamond Niner Report, all over social media. We're primarily a Twitter platform, but you can also find us on Facebook and Instagram. So for Kevin, for producer Brad, for Joe Templin, this has been Nick saying, we'll see you at the Hayes.